you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Rocket fire over Israel and Jerusalem as Palestinian terrorists and Jewish Defense Forces engage in what has become a very scary and bloody battle in the Middle East. Welcome, everybody, to the Water Cooler. I'm David Brody. It's Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. All eyes on Jerusalem. Dozens dead, hundreds injured after the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas fired rockets into Jerusalem. That's the first time they've done that since the 2014 war, and that takes this conflict to a whole other level. In addition, there have been major clashes at the Temple Mount, the sacred religious space to both Jews and Muslims in Jerusalem. And all of this coming as Israel celebrated Jerusalem Day, which of course commemorates the reunification of Eastern Jerusalem with Western Jerusalem by Israel during the Six-Day War back in 67. More in a moment. Also today, the FDA has authorized the use of the Pfizer COVID vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds in the U.S. We're going to talk to one of the leading doctors in the country about this important new development. By the way, also today, another heated exchange between Senator Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci on Capitol Hill. This time it was about where the Wuhan lab and how the virus came to be, or where the virus originated. Did it come from the Wuhan lab and how did that happen? Trust me, you don't want to miss it. Also on the show today, the vote is in. We have a winner in the Virginia gubernatorial race on the Republican side, Glenn Youngkin. Pulls it out. Will he be the next governor of Virginia? He will be with us here on the show today to discuss. But first, let's begin in Jerusalem, where the air is filled with rockets and tension. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says this: terrorist organizations in Gaza have crossed a red line and attacked us with missiles in the outskirts of Jerusalem. Whoever attacks us will pay a heavy price, warning that the fight could, quote, continue for some time. So let's head to Jerusalem now, where it is in the evening there. Joining us, our good friend Joel Rosenberg, editor-in-chief of All Israel News. Joel, hey, take us through what's happening. Give us the latest there.
Well, David, it's been a very painful 24 hours. We're just past the 24-hour mark. More than 650 rockets have been fired at Israel, including, as you say, seven were fired towards Jerusalem. I moved here with my family here in 2014. We actually arrived in the midst of that rocket war, where more than 4,200 rockets were fired in a one-month period. But we've got 650 in one day, and seven at Israel, at Jerusalem. I was out in my backyard chatting with some friends when we heard the sirens go off. And it's so rare to hear an air raid siren go off in Jerusalem. We didn't actually believe it. And then we heard the boom and felt the shaking of a rocket hitting and destroying a house not far from us. So it's there's more than a million people on both sides that live on the Gaza border, and they're living in bomb shelters. They're not sleeping much. But they're living with tremendous fear and anxiety, especially imagine the little children living in a bomb shelter, no ability to leave.
Joel, what's the what started all of this? I mean, we know about Hamas and the rockets coming towards Jerusalem, but there was they were celebrating Jerusalem Day in Israel. You had Ramadan. There were certain things that were happening. Where's the oxygen here? How did this spiral?
Sure. Well, tactically, what happened was Hamas and other terrorist organizations decided to encourage young people to stockpile rocks and stones and pieces of concrete in the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount, and then start throwing those at Jewish worshipers down on the Western Wall Plaza. That's what tactically set this thing off, because then, of course, Israeli forces had to move into the Temple Mount to stop this barrage, this violation of religious freedom. And it's a very dangerous thing to have rocks raining down on your head, right? And of course, this was designed to pull Israeli forces in and then create a moment, right, where you have tear gas and you have all this stuff going on so that on television, the world could say, or the Islamic world, the radical Islamist world could begin to say, Israel is encroaching on our religious freedom and they are desecrating our holy sites. So that's tactically what happened. It's not what you'll hear in the mainstream media, because the mainstream media acts as though suddenly one day Israel decided to be mean to Palestinians and then, you know, started bombing Gaza. The big picture, as you say, is, and you're right, you had a convergence of a couple of things. First, the end of Ramadan. That's 30 days of not eating a single piece of food or having anything, even a glass of water, all day long until the sun goes down. And Muslims are required to do this by Islamic law. And it creates tension, right? It can create piety, but it can create enormous amounts of fatigue and anger and frustration. Yeah. That combined literally with Jerusalem Day, which Palestinian Arabs hate because it, for them, it's the loss of Jerusalem. It's the not the reunification. It's the, they call it al-Nakba, the catastrophe, the disaster. And so you had a couple of factors like this. And then Hamas is also upset with the Palestinian leadership in the West Bank because there was supposed to be an election. Mm-hmm. The Palestinian leadership in the West Bank decided that Hamas was going to win, so they called it off. And Hamas has decided to create a moment where every Palestinian knows that they're in charge and they're the ones that are tough and the other guys are weak. And it's a bad convergence, you know, a perfect storm of trouble.
Let me ask you one last question on this, and I want to move to another quick topic. So where is this going exactly? Netanyahu says they crossed a red line here. This is Jerusalem they're attacking. Is this going to get worse before it gets better? What's your sense?
It's really hard to say. I've been through enough cycles of this that I can see it shutting down in the next 24 to 48 hours, but this thing could explode. I mean, when you start shooting people and killing people on both sides, this thing could just take off and become a regional war.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Listen, Joel, why I have you here, I've got to ask you about this this headline in the Times of Israel. It was fascinating to look at this. Ron Dermer suggests Israel should prioritize support of evangelicals over Jews. At least that's the, of course, the former Israeli ambassador. Talk to us about this. This is very, very interesting what he's saying here.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Times of Israel, which I love, is a publication, but the headline is terrible. Because and All Israel News, the site I lead, you know, got it more accurate. Ron Dermer was the U.S. ambassador, Israeli ambassador to the U.S. for 7 years.
Yeah.
Netanyahu's closest, most trusted advisor. And I've known Dermer for more than 20 years. What Dermer was saying, and he said it explicitly in this interview, he said, it's not that we need to do less outreach and working with American Jews of all religious denominations and political persuasions. No, no. He says, but we need to do more with evangelicals. And Dermer is an Orthodox Jew, was being interviewed by an Orthodox Jew to an Orthodox Jewish audience. So it sounded strange to their ears. And they're like, what are you talking about? He said, look at it. 25% roughly of Americans are evangelical Christians. Their numbers are huge. Their passion for Israel is huge. Israel, for most evangelicals, is either the number one issue or two or three. For some American Jews, they don't care at all about Israel. He said, so we need to do more outreach to evangelicals because they are our strategic allies. They are why America is pro-Israel in Washington. It's the American Jewish community is very small. The evangelical community, the pro-Israel community, is the backbone, he said, of the relationship, and we need to nurture it, encourage it, and develop it. And I totally agree with him, but it was a fascinating interview.
Well, Joel Rosenberg, really appreciate your time here, and thanks for giving us that perspective. It's always good to see you. Stay safe over there. Editor-in-Chief of All Israel News in Jerusalem tonight. Appreciate it, Joel. By the way, I should point out a little personal note, if you will. Grew up Jewish, gave my life to Jesus in 1988. We call him Yeshua, if you will. It's the Jewish name for Jesus. And so, look, I grew up as a Reformed Jew. I grew up in a liberal Jewish household. American Jews, American liberal Jews, my family, folks. That's how I grew up. And then, being in kind of the evangelical Christianity circles, Joel's absolutely right. Ron Dermer's absolutely right. Evangelicals are the number one supporters of the state of Israel. It's not even a question. And it's not even about the state of Israel. It's about Jews overall around the country and around the world. So don't buy this idea that evangelicals have this tension with Jews. Now, look, the Reform Jewish community and some in the conservative Jewish community possibly may have that tension. But when it comes to Orthodox Jews, they love evangelical Christians. Why? Because from a Zionist perspective, from a situation where they believe in the inerrant word of God, whether it be Old Testament or New Testament, there is simpatico agreement on Judea and Samaria and all of the important land that was given to the Jewish people by God. It's in the Bible. Look, I don't want to get into all of that. But the bottom line is this. That is why evangelical Christians support the Jewish people in spades, for sure. Anyhow, a little perspective from me from a personal standpoint. All right, when we come back, Glenn Youngkin will be here. He's the Republican nominee for governor in Virginia. Can he beat Terry McAuliffe? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. We have a winner, and I'm not talking about Powerball. We're talking about Virginia gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side. Glenn Youngkin declares victory in Virginia, the GOP's governor race. There it is on the Just the News website. He's going to face Terry McAuliffe in the fall. Donald Trump out with the endorsement, and let's go to that. He says this: congratulations to Glenn Youngkin for winning the Republican nomination for governor of Virginia. Glenn is pro-business, pro-Second Amendment, pro-veterans, pro-America. He knows how to make Virginia's economy rip-roaring, and he has my complete and total endorsement. Hey, look, an exclamation point. Say no to Terry McAuliffe and yes to patriot Glenn Youngkin. Let's bring in Glenn Youngkin right now, back with us on the water cooler. Glenn, congratulations. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an exciting day. We are already off and running. And I'll tell you, I was humbled by the overwhelming support, but I'm ready to serve and ready to lead.
Glenn, you were on this program about a week ago. You said the tide was turning. What made the difference specifically for you?
Well, over the course of the last month, we just felt this coming together of the Republican Party with a real recognition that we needed to win in November. And in fact, Virginia, because Republican Party has lost over 10 years in a row, had moved so far left. So far left, it was almost moving off the map. And Virginians across the board, not just Republicans, but independents and Democrats, are coming together and saying very clearly that what Terry McAuliffe stands for, where he's going to actually take us, is not where we want to go. And I felt that in a big way throughout the campaign over the last month. And I just knew that I was going to have some overwhelming support, which I did on Saturday in the vote. And I was just so honored to accept the nomination last night.
Glenn, how do you beat Terry McAuliffe in the fall? What's the key? What's the recipe for success?
I think there's two big factors. One is the issues are easy. Terry's on the wrong side of every issue. He wants to take away right to work and torpedo our business climate. And I want to build our business climate and make it easy to do business in Virginia, not let the unions take over our state. Terry, in fact, wants to teach our kids what to think. And I want to make sure our schools are teaching our kids how to think. Terry, in fact, wants to make it harder to be a police officer by continuing ideas about defunding and making sure that we don't have qualified immunity, when in fact, I want to fully fund our police and law enforcement and maintaining qualified immunity so that we don't have this crazy amount of frivolous civil lawsuits pressed in against folks that are trying to just do their duty. And oh, by the way, what that means is we're going to have the best law enforcement in America, as opposed to what Terry's vision is to have none. So he's on the wrong side of every issue. And that's not just with Republicans, that was with all Virginians. But second of all, what we've learned over the course of the last 4 months of campaigning is that Virginians are ready to come together. This is about a Republican Party that is growing through addition and multiplication, not through subtraction and division. And this is the differentiated kind of campaign that we are running and why we won the nomination and why we're going to win in November.
Glenn, how do you reach those key Washington, D.C. suburbs and exurbs? They have gone considerably blue in the last 4 to 8 years. How do you combat that? Because you know what they're going to do. The Democrats are going to tie you to Trump. Trump has supported you. You've supported Trump. I mean, let's be clear. So how do you bridge that? Because that's not going to play well in many of those blue trending Virginia suburbs near D.C.
Well, in fact, we're engaging in Northern Virginia and, oh, by the way, Hampton Roads and suburban mm-hmm. Richmond already. We've been engaging from the beginning with minority communities who, in fact, have conservative values, and the Republican Party just hasn't engaged. And with women, we've had the Women for Glenn up and running from the beginning, led by my lovely wife and one of our close friends, Sherry Maruca. But then also we've been engaging in coalitions already. I mean, Black Virginians for Glenn is up and running. We've been reaching into the Hispanic community and the Asian community and the Indian community. I mean, this has already been a big effort in our campaign. And because we can't wait, we couldn't wait until mid-May to get started, because we have an election that's going to start in September. And so these are all the building blocks to winning in November. It's the right side of all of the issues that matter to all Virginians. It's reaching into the minority communities effectively with our shared values to listen and actually participate, as opposed to just simply asking for their vote. Yeah. It's bringing women back into the party. And finally, it's outworking everybody.
Glenn, how concerned are you about some of the talk about Amanda Chase potentially running as an independent? I mean, it's going to take all hands on deck. The last thing you need is that vote to get siphoned off anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not concerned. The senator and I have become friends, and I respect her deeply, and I think she respects me. And so this is just a matter of us coming together. I've actually spoken with her, and our families have gotten to know one another on the campaign trail. So I look forward to actually having Amanda support me along the way here. I just think that everybody's going to take a little time here, and we're going to come together, and we're going to go get this done.
Yeah, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems to me what you're suggesting on Terry McAuliffe and Democrats is that they have overplayed their hand. And if they've overplayed their hand, it's going to come back to haunt them with those independents and folks that may have been voting blue, but would give Republicans a shot because of the schools issue and a lot of the critical race theory stuff and all that.
Absolutely. They have not only overplayed their hand, they have, in fact, moved so far left. As I said, I don't even think they're on the map anymore. Mm-hmm. And this is Virginians, not just Republicans, that think this. And this is why I have Democrats actually supporting me already, saying we cannot afford another term of the McAuliffe-Northam administration. This isn't just Republicans, it's Virginians. And that's why I'm so encouraged.
Yeah. All right. Glenn Youngkin, really appreciate you being on the show today. Good luck. And I'd love to get you back on the show.
I look forward to it. And thanks for having me today.
All right. Glenn Youngkin, who was also on Just the News AM this morning, making the rounds, clearly, and taking a victory lap and a well-deserved one. Look, this is going to be a test case across the country. A lot of eyeballs on this. Remember, it's an off-year election, 2021. Most of those gubernatorial races are in 2022 and 2024 and all that type of thing. But 2021 is a Virginia year. It's an odd year election. This is what Virginia does. Remember, in Virginia, you are governor for 4 years only, and then you're done. One term and one term only. And so Terry McAuliffe, who, of course, was governor at one point, had a step away. Ralph Northam came in, and now Terry McAuliffe will come back. It's going to be very interesting because Terry McAuliffe is pretty much embracing the Joe Biden playbook, if you will. And Glenn Youngkin has to stay close to Trump to make sure he gets the base turnout in Virginia as well. But how do you get the base turnout with Trump and at the same time get some of those, let's be honest, populist? When I say populace, I'm talking about volume of people in the D.C. suburbs that have gone blue. Can you bring some of them down? And what I mean by that is, instead of getting 70%, where Democrats get 70% of those D.C. suburbs, can you get that number down to 65% or so? If that's the case, you might win. All right, we're back in a moment with COVID, one of the top doctors in the country.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. I tell you what's some news at the water cooler, if you will. This news about the FDA authorizing the Pfizer vaccine for youth ages 12 to 15. We should point out that right now it's under emergency authorization, and there's a few more steps to go as it relates to the CDC guidance and all of that. But that is the news for today. We want to get some more information about this new development from Dr. Miguela Caniza. She is Director of Infectious Diseases, Director of the Infectious Diseases Program at St. Jude Global. Doctor, thanks for being here.
It is a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, we have you on the phone here, but we want to ask you a few questions about this approval that the FDA is now giving to, I guess, the vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds. What's your overall reaction to this new development?
I think that everyone, and the same like me, pediatricians especially, are absolutely thrilled with that, because we really, finally, we are going to have something that we are very effective, that we are going to be given to children on that age group.
Right. So tell me a little bit about why it's important and why you think this is a good step. I know there's some people that are concerned about the vaccine overall, just in adults and now into children. I'm not sure about the trials that have been run here. So I think, what about the concerns that folks might have?
Yes, and I understand completely the concern that parents might have, because I'm a mom, so
right.
So I understand them very well, and also I have a kid. So the reasons why parents might be concerned is because it's a new vaccine. It's a brand new vaccine for a brand new virus that we have never seen before, because this is an animal virus. And then the other concern that the parents might have is that that seems like it was developed very quick. And so, because most of the other vaccine took some time to be developed. And so those are kind of like the concern. And then the other is the technology used, because this is like the first time that kind of technology is used for that particular vaccine. And I think that those are the concerns that parents might have. And there is an answer for those concerns.
So when you say the technology, help us through that. What's you're saying? There's a different technology used in the vaccine for these children, for the kids, compared to the adults, or just overall?
No, that just overall, because this is which is called the genetic vaccine, and the genetic vaccine is just to put a little piece of the gene that code for the spike protein, and I think that is the one that as soon as you talk about genetic, people are concerned about that. But usually that is just to produce a little piece of protein so that the body can produce the defense against that.
Right. So what should parents be thinking through as they decide whether or not to give their child this vaccine? Because is there a difference between giving a child this vaccine and an adult the vaccine, or is it pretty much the same type of process?
It is the same. It is the same, and the immune system is the same. So what you do with the vaccine is you elicit a response to a little piece that the body is going to be recognizing, but instead of being an infection, it's just a little piece. And so the body recognizes that, and the little piece is the attachment side of the virus. And so if you provide that, so the body is prepared for when the infection comes, to react against that attachment site.
People are very concerned. I mean, there are certain people, there's a certain segment of society that won't get vaccinated. I would hate to see people shamed either way, whether you take the vaccine or don't take the vaccine. We have enough division in this country, but what can you tell people that are concerned about taking the vaccine? I mean, because there are folks that just, not just the kids, but the adults as well, just that they have a lot of concerns.
Well, what I would say is right now, the risk of getting COVID and the risk of COVID is much higher than the potential risk of side effect of the vaccine. And the current vaccine, and specifically, you know, the Pfizer that has been approved for the younger age, is very safe. And it's very safe, and importantly, it is efficacious. That means that produces the antibody that is necessary mm-hmm. to prevent for the children to get the infection.
Dr. Caniza, great information. We'd love to have you back on the show sometime very soon. Thank you so very much.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Magella Caniza there. Appreciate her. By the way, also on the COVID front today, a fascinating and testy exchange in a Senate committee today between Senator Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci. Yet again, by the way, this time they were discussing something called gain of function. And basically, this is where researchers basically make a virus in a lab on purpose, deliberately. So basically to help prepare for better responses to outbreaks that might occur naturally. So they try to get ahead of the curve by actually making the virus. Well, that's when Senator Paul brought up what happened in that Wuhan lab, and he blamed Fauci. Have a look.
Will you, in front of this group, categorically say that the COVID-19 could not have occurred through serial passage in a laboratory?
I do not have any accounting of what the Chinese may have done, and I'm fully in favor of any further investigation of what went on in China. However, I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You do support it in the U.S. We have 11 labs doing it, and you have allowed it here. We have a committee to do it, but the committee has granted every exemption. You're fooling with Mother Nature here. You're allowing superviruses to be created with a 15% mortality. It's very dangerous. I think it was a huge mistake to share this with China, and it's a huge mistake to allow this to continue in the United States. And we should be very careful to investigate where this virus came from.
I fully agree that you should investigate where the virus came from. But again, we have not funded gain-of-function research on this virus in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, no matter how many times
you say it, there was research. There was research done with Dr. Shi and Dr. Barrick. They have collaborated on gain-of-function research where they enhanced the SARS virus to infect human airway cells, and they did it by merging a new spike protein on it. That is gain-of-function. That was joint research between the Wuhan Institute and Dr. Barrick. You can't deny it.
Look, we should point out for the record, back in 2014, NIH stopped funding this gain-of-function research, but then they started funding this again 3 years later in 2017. So there are a lot of questions that clearly remain. When we come back, Jim DeMint, the author of the new book, Satan's Dare. Fascinating book, fascinating conversation, I hope, in a moment.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. This just in, we live in a fallen world. We live in a world full of sin. And if you want to know more about all of that, just start reading the Bible. It's in Genesis, actually Genesis chapter 1, page 1. It's right there. But there's a new book out that has a new take on searching for truth in a world of suffering, and also in a world where people have a lot of questions as well. It's called Satan's Dare. That's the name of the new book. It's a novel by former U.S. Senator Jim DeMint, fascinating story about love and tragedy, suffering, failure, mercy, justice, redemption, a lot of biblical themes there, most of all truth. And joining us now, Jim DeMint. Jim, glad to have you back, sir, on the water cooler.
David, thank you. And thanks again for your endorsement of the book. We've used your quote regularly, so we're grateful for that.
Well, I was honored to do it, and I'm glad you thought of me. I do appreciate that, Jim. Listen, you've written books before You're a very successful author. This book, though, definitely different than all the rest. Why don't you take us through it a little bit?
Well, Dave, it's not political at all, except it has huge implications to American politics, because there's a verse in Psalm 11 that says, if the foundations are removed, what will the righteous do? We need to remember as Americans that all of Western civilization began with Jesus, the Bible, Judeo-Christian values. And we're stripping those away today. And the Christian church is not defending the basic ideas that there is a God. God created this world. The Bible's true. Jesus is the only way to salvation. So this book, it will actually confirm for a lot of believers their faith, but it'll challenge skeptics because it spends a lot of time aligning science with biblical truth. But it is a novel, and I think the stories, the characters will allow a lot of Americans to relate to the suffering and tragedy that goes on in almost everyone's life.
Jim, it's a provocative title as well, Satan's Dare. Give us a sense of why people should understand what the title is implying or what the book is trying to get at with the title.
Well, the book is built on the first chapter of Job with the idea that Job might represent all of mankind and give us the reason that all of us as pilgrims have to go through this physical life. In that first chapter, Satan challenges God to remove the blessings from Job. In effect, let him know good and evil. And so Satan have his way with him. And basically Satan said, if you give Job a clear choice, he'll choose me and curse you. The idea there is that unless God blesses us, we will not follow him. And one of the premises of the book is that as Christians, when we obey God, when we praise him, when we praise him in the middle of suffering, that we are proving Satan wrong and defeating him. But a lot of the book is about the question of why. Why did God create this physical world? Why do his children have to go through this physical world with all the suffering and tragedy and death? And a lot of it comes back to the first chapter of Job, is that we may be living out justice because of Satan's dare.
You know, that's fascinating, Jim. And, you know, not to get too into biblical theology here, but the book of Ecclesiastes also asks a lot of questions and has kind of a, if you will, kind of a, I don't want to say a negative view, but kind of like a, you know, what's all this for? What's the purpose of all of this? And I'm assuming that's a theme that you raise in the book as it relates to the questions that a lot of people will have.
Yeah. Yeah, the two main characters both have terrible tragedies in their life. One of them becomes the world's most famous atheist. The other, because of a loving wife and loving people around him, he complains and fights with God just like Job did, but he comes back. And part of the book is the debate between the atheist and the believer talking about science and talking about the Bible. And it's important that we ask these questions of, did God really create the earth? Did he do it in 6 days? Why did he do it? Why did he set Adam and Eve up for failure there? Or did he? And one of the theories in the book is that we as the body of Christ have actually been given God's authority in this physical world. And another question is, if God's in control, why is there so much evil, suffering, death? And so one of the ideas here is God has deferred his authority to the body of Christ. And every time we come together and praise him and pray and obey, we are fighting that great battle in heaven that we read about in Revelations. And that's just one of the thoughts of the book. What if what we do as believers actually has an impact on the outcome of that great battle between God and Satan?
Yeah, these are huge questions for all of eternity, for everyone's individual eternity as to where they go after this world. And we always like to talk about GOP politics and what's going to happen, who's up, who's down. Who cares about any of that ultimately?
Right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. This was, a pun intended. This was a novel approach to writing a book. Why this version? Why this way of doing it as opposed to some of your other books that were obviously nonfiction and political in nature? But this one seemed to take a different approach.
Well, I've been working on this off and on for 15 years, and I've written a number of different versions, and the first few versions were nonfiction. And the editor and publisher that I work with just finally said, this is just too much theology. It's just too thick. You have to help people see how it's relevant to real life, how people live this out. And so I've had a number of versions of creating a story so that people can see themselves in this and see the interactions and see how other believers play out the tragedy in their life and how they deal with God and all the questions they have. And it actually just, it came out to be, I think, a very fascinating story, but also with a very deep message. As I said, it's not really political at all, but it has huge implications of whether or not we as Christians are going to play a role in stewardship of this country, because America is declining, David, because the Christian church is declining, and the Christian church is declining because it's become unmoored from truth. You don't hear many Christian pastors standing up and defending the truth of the Bible in the middle of all this woke culture. People are afraid of absolute truth, of biblical morality. And I think this book will confirm the faith of many people who read it.
Jim DeMint, really a pleasure to have you on the show. The book is Satan's Dare, and I guess this is where I say you can get it wherever books are sold, right? Amazon and all that good stuff.
You're exactly right. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Jim. Jim DeMint, a good friend for many, many years, and you've got to read this book. It will challenge you, and that is a good thing. We're back in a moment with the last sip. More bad news for Liz Cheney. Back in a moment.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. Time for the last sip. O.J. Simpson. Fill in the blank. We're not going to show you a white Ford Bronco chase. We've seen that many, many, many times. Too many times, actually. So here is the proverbial kiss of death, pun intended, for Liz Cheney. Anytime you get an endorsement from O.J. Simpson, it's not a good day. So Liz Cheney, I'm speaking to you directly. I'm not sure if you watched the water cooler. You're going to lose your job and leadership tomorrow, FYI, on Wednesday. But OJ, in case anybody's wondering, OJ is a big fan of yours, which is, once again, pun intended, called the kiss of death. Here's OJ.
Fact-based truth and honesty seem to be the enemy of many of these Republican politicians. And Liz Cheney stands up for the truth, and that's got her a lot of heat. She may lose her position in the party. She may even lose her career as a politician, but that is something to be admired, standing up for the truth. That's something I know her father wouldn't have done. So right now, I'm kind of a fan of Liz Cheney.
You know, the water cooler reached out to Liz Cheney for a comment, couldn't find her. She was on the floor, passed out, needing smelling salts to be revived after seeing those comments from O.J. Simpson. That's a joke. By the way, here's some analysis for you on O.J. He's guilty. Thank you. And so that's analysis. Don't put that down as news. Don't put that down as news. That's analysis. All right. And by the way, I just thought, and I had a list here of a few things because, you know, we always have lists here at the water cooler. You know, Liz Cheney getting an endorsement from O.J., bad news. That is kind of like, listen to this. That's like, I thought that this would be like Ilhan Omar getting an endorsement from Benjamin Netanyahu. You know what I'm saying? Like, does Ilhan Omar really want an endorsement from Netanyahu? I don't think so. This would be like AOC getting an endorsement from Donald Trump. Never going to happen. But boy, that would hurt her with her liberal base if Donald Trump came out and supported AOC. Rashida Tlaib, what if she got a holiday named after her by the Israeli Knesset, by the Israel's Knesset? That would be something similar to what OJ just did to Liz Cheney. And this one is one of my favorite. Ben Shapiro, a conservative Jew, getting an endorsement from the BDS movement. That's right, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement. Could you imagine if they endorsed Ben Shapiro. So there you have it. Liz Cheney, congratulations on the OJ endorsement, by the way. We'll talk to you after you're revived from smelling salts. And oh, by the way, you're losing your position on Wednesday. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. Time to get to Joe Weber, the news editor of justthenews.com. It's a great website. I've heard of it. Yeah, no, I've definitely heard of it. You know what? So have tens of millions of Americans. Joe, what's going on over there?
Hey, how are you? Really busy news day. I'm going to try to run it down for you as fast as possible. The number one story trending on our site, what GOP Senator Joni Ernst said, essentially that trying to get Liz Cheney out of House leadership and not giving her say is tantamount to cancel culture. That's the number one story. I'm kind of surprised about that, but nevertheless, yes. Three other stories that are really interesting, I think that your viewers would like to know about. I think if they don't already, Mitch McConnell did something that's quite unprecedented for a leader of either chamber, spoke today in a hearing. They typically reserve their comments for the floor because everything is protocol there. But he was speaking out of the For the People Act. That's the Democrat-led measure to reform voting laws across the country. And he basically said he would question why Democrats were so hell-bent on rewiring the American democracy on their own. Chuck Schumer spoke out as well, said that what that Republicans were doing was, if they didn't get along, get on board, it was reprehensible in terms of trying to stifle voter suppression. Two other stories of interest. One is that we're seeing right now gas lines on the East Coast as a result of the Colonial Pipeline disruption from the ransomware hack. We're seeing it in the mountains of North Carolina, and we're seeing it on coastal Carolina. Obviously, it's harder, two harder places to try to get oil to there, to, you know. And then we're also seeing it not so much in the cities, but again, on the outlying areas. And then lastly, Governor Gavin Newsom of California, he's going campaigning across the country, up and down the state of California, with an offer to provide cash to people, and right in the backdrop of him facing a recall election in November. Now, this is part of $75.5 million of a surplus based all on capital gains and another $26 million from the COVID relief package that Congress passed in March. Republicans howled about this idea that it would become a slush fund. It's sort of come true here.
Joe, thanks. Busy day over at justthenews.com. Really, it's always busy over there. Thanks, you, Joe. I appreciate it. All right. And by the way, that gas story rings home or close to home for me just the other day. I looked for gas near my house, couldn't find any unleaded. Went to another gas station, couldn't find any there either. Anyhow, tough stuff. Tomorrow on the show, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert will be here. Rick Green as well, founder of PatriotAcademy.com. Boy, we have a good show.